Well, I have two scripture passages I want to share with you. And I dare say this may be the first time we have ever read a passage from the Old Testament prophet Habakkuk. Now you know how to say that word, Habakkuk. I also want to make note that these two passages I'm reading from Habakkuk 2, 1 through 3 and Proverbs 29, 18, I'm reading from the King James Version. Now that will take us back, won't it? The King James Version. The reason why is because I wanted that word vision. And some of the modern translations don't translate that word vision. They translate it something else. And so I went back to the King James Version. So let me read for you from Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 in the King James Version. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain among the tablets, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. And reading from Proverbs chapter 29, verse 18, a passage that is familiar to many of us, where there is no vision, the people perish. This is the word of the Lord. Having vision is important, is it not? I envy those who have 20/20 vision. I hear there are baseball players who have such vision that they can see the rotation of a fastball coming at them at 95 miles an hour. They can see the rotation. They can count the stitches on the baseball. I was 7 years old in third grade when the teacher had to move me to the front desk of the front row so I could see the board. And even then, I had trouble reading some of the things. And the teacher told my parents, I think your son needs glasses. So I've been wearing glasses since I was 7 years old. Now, there was a period for about a year or two when I tried contacts, but I didn't like them. I went back to glasses. I thought they were just too much trouble. So I've worn glasses all my life. And for many of us who have worn glasses, especially as children, we get taunted. We're called four eyes. Hey, four eyes. Well, that's me. I was a big glasses, tall, little, short, little, skinny kid with big glasses. I was a sight, yes. But vision is important. And it's important for all of us to have it. It's important for businesses to have a vision. It's important for any organization to have a vision, to know where they are going, to have a direction, to have a sense of purpose. Because if you don't know where you're going, you're never going to get there. Obviously, and so it's important for churches to have a vision, a shared vision of where the church is going, where God is calling the church to be. And it's important for every church to go through that discernment process every now and then to refresh that vision, because invariably God has moved and we don't always move along with God. And so it's important to know where is God and where does the church need to be if we are to be with God in ministry to the world. And so having a vision is important. Now, when I first, I went into the ministry later in life. I was in my 40s when I left the graphic arts field and went into the ministry. It wasn't an unusual thing to do. My dad was a Methodist minister. I grew up in the church, and so it seemed natural. But I waited until I was certain that I had received God's call. And at the age of 40, I heard that call very insistently to go into the ministry. And so I went to school, went to seminary. And while I was in seminary, I asked the district superintendent and said, is there any place where I can serve in ministry? Can I be an associate pastor somewhere? And he said, well, we don't have any openings right now for associate pastor, but there's a church down in Buckeye. He said, Now, remember, you went down there and preached a couple of times to fill in for the pastor who was ailing. And I said, yes, I remember that. It was a Palm Sunday, and I got word that the retired pastor there had been ill and had not been able to serve the church. And so Sue and I drove down to Liberty, which is near Buckeye. And the little country church was built in 1910. And just a delightful little country church. And so we were there for Palm Sunday, my wife and I and about eight other people. And I said, okay. And so then they asked me to come back on Easter Sunday. So Easter Sunday, my wife and I came back. We brought our two daughters. So now there were about 12 of us. And so it was this church that the district superintendent asked me if I wanted to serve part-time while I was in seminary. And I sure, I'll do that. And so I got down there in June. I met with the staff parish relations committee, both of them, and only to find out that they closed the church in the summertime. That they closed the church. They didn't open it again until October because they didn't want to have the expense of air conditioning for the two or three people that were there. And so I said, okay, well, I'm taking my classes in the summertime. So I went to school. I was going to school at Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena. So I would drive over during the week, take my classes, and come home on the weekend. And on the weekends, I would go down to Buckeye, to Liberty, and I would go around and I would visit in homes. Now, it's a little different in Buckeye because the homes aren't right next to each other. They're spaced out, sometimes a quarter of a mile apart, because this is a farming community at that time. This was in the mid-90s. And so I had my pickup truck. I had my cowboy boots and my jeans. I fit the part, and I went knocking on doors. And I visited with family, people. And if they had children, I said, we're going to have a Sunday school. And if they had teenagers, I said, we're going to have a youth group. We're going to have whatever you need because we want you to be a part of this church. God gave me a vision for that church of revitalizing and rebirthing that church. I didn't want to wait till October to have our first worship service. I was chomping at the bit to get going, and so I convinced them that we could start in September. So the Sunday after Labor Day, we had our first worship service, and I had great plans for that. God had different plans. I can't blame God for the air conditioning going out, but we had to move into the fellowship hall, which had no air conditioning. It was in the hundreds. I thought, these people are never... We had 40 people for our first worship service, and six children. I checked back at the record, six children. And I thought, oh, they're never going to come back. They came back the next Sunday, and with more. I think we had 46 the following Sunday. We were in the sanctuary. We had cleaned out a couple of these classrooms that had now just become storage. And we had a nursery. We had a Sunday school classroom. And it went on from there. The following spring, we got the men together, and we painted the church, and we did some repair work. And the church continued to grow. They had partitioned off a part of the sanctuary with sliding doors because they never used it. And we opened that up, and that expanded the seating capacity. And when I left 2 years later, we had doubled the membership from 49 to 90-something, and we were averaging over 100 in worship. And that church was rebirthed. And the district superintendent was very impressed with that. He said, you know, it's some people say that to bring a church back to life like that is more difficult than actually starting a new church because they say giving birth is easier than raising the dead. And he said, now that you've raised the dead, how would you like to give birth? Because he said, my district superintendent said, we need to start a new church. And he said, I think you'd be a good person to do that. And I said, will it be a full-time appointment? Yeah, it'll be a full-time. Oh, good. Okay, I want to go from half-time to full-time because I got to pay for seminary. So full-time appointment to start a new church in Surprise. All right. I didn't know anybody in Surprise. And Surprise at that time had a population of about 15,000, a very small little community. There was hardly anything west of Grand Avenue. And so I thought, but God gave me a vision. God gave me a vision of what that church could be. And I began sharing that vision with people as I met them. And we had our first worship service in January of 1997. We had about 100 people. Most of them were well-wishers from other churches, but we had our 100. And That first summer, I thought, God, I'm not sure we're going to make it, because our attendance one summer Sunday was 17, and half of those were children. And we could have had that service in my living room. We were worshiping in an elementary school. But we continued with the vision. People came and came, and I did my art sermons, which was certainly a draw. People brought friends to see those. And we were able to get funding. We put a building up, which was a huge thing. And when I left after 11 years, our membership was around 600. And we had 4 weekend worship services. So God was good. God was great. We were able to fulfill a vision that God had given me. I went from there to plant another new church in Peoria. And again, God gave me a vision for that. And again, we talked about the vision. The vision was what brought us together as a people, and a vision is what sustained us as we moved forward. We knew that God had a vision and a plan for our community, for our church, and we moved forward. So having a vision, a shared vision, is important for any church, but particularly for new churches, because part of the vision is survival. You have to have a certain number of people to survive and have that church be able to finally grow. And so there's a certain urgency in bringing people into the church. There's a certain urgency in growth. And we saw that happen over and over again. When you get into an established church, there doesn't seem to be that same impetus. It's not a struggle for survival. And so, but we need to cast that vision again for this church. And we have. The church council has met for the last 6 months, and we have ascertained and we've prayed about it, and God has given us a vision. The vision statement is printed on your worship bulletin. Growing a vibrant church by sharing Christ with the world. Now, the vision is a picture of the destination, all right? It's the destination. It's where we want to be 3 years from now, Vision 2020. But how do we get there? Well, the mission statement is the roadmap that helps you get to the vision, helps to achieve the vision. And our mission statement is composed of 4 words. You all know the 4 I words? Invite, inspire, involve, increase. And that's what's going to enable us to achieve the vision that we have for growth for this church. Because that's what we want to do. We want to grow. We want to grow numerically, as I said before. We want to grow spiritually as well, but it has to be a shared vision, and we as a congregation have to embrace that and make that a part of who we are. Inviting. Statistics show that 80%, I don't know the exact figure, 80% of people who are members of churches are there because somebody invited them to worship. You know, newspaper advertising, all that stuff doesn't do anything compared to personal evangelism, personal witness, personal. Our new members are going to be joining today. One of the things they're going to vow, and we all do as members, is support the church through our prayers, our presence, our gifts, our service, and our witness. So all of that is a part, and it's your part that you have to play to invite people to worship, where they will be inspired by what we are doing as a church in worship, in ministry, becoming involved. And it's important that we all be involved in what we're doing together as a church. And then finally, all of that will result in increase. Now, I mentioned Habakkuk before. Habakkuk was a 7th century Old Testament prophet. And he was living in a time when Israel and Judah had separated, and he was a prophet in Judah. And he was upset with how things were there. People were corrupt. Leadership was corrupt. People were corrupt. They weren't worshiping God. And he said, God, how much longer? And God said, I have a vision for you, but you have to wait for it. It's coming. It will not tarry, but you must wait. You have to be patient for it. Fast forward a couple of years, a couple of centuries, the Jews have been defeated by Babylonian forces. They've been taken into what's known as the Babylonian captivity, 70 years of captivity. And in the meantime, Jerusalem has been destroyed. The walls have been torn down. The temple has been destroyed. Only a remnant remain. Now, Nehemiah was not a prophet. He was a Jew who was a court official in the court of King Cyrus. And he asked King Cyrus if he could return to Jerusalem and bring some people back and rebuild the walls. And the king said yes. Cyrus said yes, you can return to Jerusalem. Rebuild the walls. Well, Nehemiah got back. and brought the people together and talked about the vision of rebuilding Jerusalem. And the people said, we don't want that. We don't want that. You see, we're happy with the way it is right now. We're not a threat to other nations, so they're ignoring us. They're leaving us alone. If we rebuild the walls, then we're going to attract their attention. We don't want to do that. We are happy with the status quo. Now, there are a lot of people in churches, when they hear about vision statements, and they hear about change, they're more like the people that say, I like the status quo. I like the way it is now. People don't like change. They say the only person that likes change is a wet baby. And it's true. We resist change because it often calls for us to leave our comfort zone. It calls for us sometimes to do uncomfortable things. It calls for us to talk to a neighbor about our church. It calls us to maybe share our faith with a fellow worker. It calls us to maybe do something that we don't feel prepared to do, what we know God is calling us to do. That's where vision can sometimes be a difficult process. We talk about, yes, the grand dream. We want that grand dream. We want to grow, but we're not sure that we want what's going to result from that growth. New people. We like the people we have. Now, there's many, many small churches that refuse to grow because they won't let anybody else come in. We're not like that. We are a welcoming, friendly church. I hear that all the time. People tell me, our new members who are joining today have told me they have not been in a more welcoming, friendlier church than Willowbrook. We love people. We love to welcome them. Let's invite more people to come. Loved ones, we have an opportunity here over the next 3 years to see some significant growth if we all work together. We can't leave it up to the leaders. We can't leave it up to the clergy. It has to be in the culture of the congregation to reach out and to bring people in, to inspire them, to involve them in ministry so that we can all increase not only in numbers but spiritually as well. It's what God is calling us to do and to be as a church. Let us embrace that vision. And let's remember the four I words. What are they? Invite, inspire, involve, increase. Amen.